Welcome back to Talking Hoosier Baseball. You are listening to a podcast by the iubase.com website for more for people interested in some more information about the Indiana University baseball program. Today is Monday, March 18th, 2019. I am Chris Feeney. We are joined by the master of the RPI and the infield error whisperer, Carl James. We have stat guru and the voice of the Hoosier Baseball Live Stats, Cassidy Palmer, as well as the creator of iubase.com, and what a job he did on the grill this weekend. Not one tailgate, but two, Josh Bennett. All right, so let's see what we got now. The Hoosiers seemed to start off very well in that first game of the week. Gabe Bierman started it off excellent. Unfortunately, the bullpen, not as good to finish up, and we lost the first game to Cincinnati. But what you need when you've just fallen under 500 is to come back home to the Bart for four. And what did it lead to? 51 runs, 53 hits, a quality start for Tanner Gordon, an amazing start for Andrew Salfrank, plenty of Hoosier highlights all over the place. We had good weather, you know what I mean? The sun was shining. It would have a whole different story if that sun wasn't out. That's why some of us are a little sunburned, but what can you do? It was a fun weekend at the Bart with lots of highlights. My highlight's going to go, okay, to the man who had back-to-back-to-back days of home runs, Ryan Fineman. It even won him the Big Ten Player of the Week award. I don't know if he changed up his pregame meal. Maybe he's off the ribs. Maybe he's trying something new. I'm not sure. Maybe it's the walk-up song. Something is different about Ryan. He was on fire. Let's see. Carl, what's your Hoosier highlight?
My Hoosier highlight is, yeah, I like the bombs too, so I'm going to go with Matt Lloyd's two bombs on Saturday. Particularly because the second bomb, you know, you get used to these guys just mashing the ball, squaring a ball up. It's a no doubter. That second one, I mean, it looked like he was lunging for it, and you know, it's low and outside. He's stretching that swing down. You know, it looks like he might have got a piece of it, and you know, there's a lazy pop fly going, it's a home run. it was fun. It was a lot of fun. So seeing Matt Lloyd have a really great day and hit a couple bombs, even interesting. Hey, he's a strong guy, and it showed. Cass, what do you think?
So for me, my highlight wasn't necessarily limited to any one player. It was the fact that these guys were getting off to fast starts every game. They scored across the five games, they scored 13 runs in the first inning of those games. They scored 32 runs in the first three innings of the games. That's pretty nuts. But to be able to get out to that lead, give your starter a little bit of room, it really does help. And you saw a difference throughout the way that they weren't so much worried about the guy on second base because they were up by 11 runs at that point. So that really does help. And seeing those kind of numbers were just startling. So Josh, what was your highlight?
Thanks, Cass. There were so many highlights from this week that we didn't even mention. It was great to see the basket warmed up from top to bottom. Enjoyed some decent weather for March in Bloomington, for sure. Drew had a blast chasing down some home runs. Went from diving under a picnic table to worming under a fence in right field and trying to outrun some kids quite a bit older than him. But I think my highlight this week is going to be something that I think could be easily overlooked. Chris did touch on it in the preview part of it. I'm going to go with... the way you make it into the NCAA tourney field is to win series on the weekend and lock down the midweek games. This week over in Cincy, Gabe Bierman had a really strong outing. Unfortunately, scuffled a bit after he left the game and didn't get the win, but I've been really impressed with the freshman in his two midweek starts, his first coming against Butler during the home opening week. And in those two starts, he has a line of 9 innings pitched, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, and 8 strikeouts. He threw 67 pitches in 4 innings on his first start against Butler, and then 81 this last start with 5 innings pitched. Getting 4 or 5 quality innings on a Tuesday or Wednesday can really help conserve the bullpen for the weekends And he didn't throw this weekend, so I'm going to guess that he'll get the call tomorrow over in Terre Haute against a scorching hot Indiana State team. It'll be a really good test to see if he's able to solidify his spot as the go-to midweek guy for the season. So now that we've all had a chance to mention our Hoosier highlights, it's time to move on to the Red Belt segment. Feeney, who gets the hardware this week?
All right. Thanks, Josh. When you have a four-game home sweep and score that many runs, it's not easy to do this. Okay, let's just put it that way first. The easiest one for me, I'm going to have to go with the Joey Donato Pitching Award Red Belt first, and that's Andrew Salfrank. He was amazing. 14 strikeouts. Hadn't been done in 19 years. Zach McClellan, okay? The 2000 draftee for the Kansas City Royals was the last one to have 14 Ks in a game, and Salfrank did it on Sunday. He was great. Not an extra base hit given up the entire game, okay? He was just amazing to watch. He struck out the side in the first. At one point, he struck out another five in a row. He was putting the ball wherever he wanted to put it. It was really enjoyable to watch. I know we talked a lot on the post game about his mechanics and that he was working on with Coach Parker, and whatever they worked on seemed to be agreeing with him big time. So, another thing. From two outs in the third to one out in the seventh, he didn't give up a hit. So he just rolled through inning after inning after inning, and they weren't even touching him. So a well-earned Pitching Joey Donato Award Red Belt for Andrew Salfrank. Now for the defensive Red Belt, this one, two outs in the fourth inning, Tanner Gordon pitching a great game, and there's a shot hit. It was heading down the right field line. It never got there, but it was heading down the right field line. And I have video of it, and I looked at the right fielder, and he was analyticed all the way over to the, say, right center field gap. So this ball was heading to the corner, and it probably wouldn't have been a triple, but Matt Lloyd got some leather on it. The crowd erupted. It was a nice catch by Matt. And I know he's had some issues there, and he really shined. He had some nice scoops over the weekend. But for that play alone, Tanner Gordon was pitching a great game. You don't need all of a sudden a guy on third and everything to change. So Matty gets the defensive Tony Butler Award Red Belt. Now, the offensive, I had a little disagreement with the Big Ten. Now, I know Ryan Fineman won offensive player for the Big Ten, but I've decided to go another way. And not because it was his birthday this weekend, okay? But I'm going to go with Matt Lloyd. He scored a run and drove in a run in every game this weekend. But the reason he's really getting it is for his five at-bats in the first game on Saturday, the game that was close, the game that was 5-2. He hits two home runs. He gets two other hits and a walk. Comes to the plate five times, and they couldn't get him out. And he hits two bombs, like Carl said. And it was his birthday this weekend. So, you know, from what I understand, he's the oldest player ever to play college baseball right now at 23 years old. It's probably not true, but I read it on the internet, so maybe it is. So that for this week, we have Matt Lloyd twice, okay, defensive and offensive. Too bad he didn't close out a game. He could have got all three. But Andrew Salfrank wins the Pitching of the Week award, and those are your three.
You've got mail. Oh, that's right. It's mailbag time. All right. Well, we've got a happier, you know, group of questions this time, which is nice. So we're just going to kind of go ahead and dive into the mailbag. The first question is from Drew. We're going to give this one to Josh. How do you feel Coach Mercer has done balancing the pitching with so many options? Do they feel some arms are being overutilized? Some may be underutilized?
Oh, thanks for the question, Drew. Looking at stat lines, I definitely don't think there's anyone being overworked, if that's what you meant. If you're meaning putting guys in spots they shouldn't be, I really don't recall any of that blatantly stand out. I know there were some grumblings when the Coastal game got away from us and we didn't put Lloyd in the game to finish it off. But as I talked about the pod after that series, I have a feeling he was off limits that game after he threw 40 some odd pitches the day before. But if you go back and look at the flow of what spots guys are getting used in this season, as the season's progressed, not the same from the beginning to the end, but I think he's been adjusting, as he should be, to who's been the best guy recently. When a guy's clicked, he's been used in that spot until he shows he's no longer has the hot hand. balance-wise, I think he's done a great job giving the freshman innings to give them experience and also see what he might have down the road. I have a feeling those innings will start to dry up a little bit, maybe as soon as this weekend once conference play starts. Guessing he'll tighten it up a little bit and go with the guys he trusts the most. As far as underutilized, there really are only a few things that don't necessarily look off to me, but if you showed it to me at the beginning of the season or even before the season started, I'd be really surprised at a couple numbers, 19 games in. First would be our Saturday starter sitting at 24 and two-thirds innings and five starts. Pitch count's been an issue, but he made great strides on Saturday with that game, pitching eight innings. My second one would be Cam sitting at only eight innings pitched on the season with four appearances. He didn't travel for the first few weekends, so I'm sure that factors in. But with his history of starting, I would think that number to begin the season would have surprised us all that he's sitting at eight this far in. The one that really shocks me, though, is Matt Lloyd. He's got three appearances in 19 games, four innings pitched, one inning pitched in the last 15 days. I hope he can stay sharp with that light of a workload. I know he's been playing a lot of, almost every game at first base, and his bat's heating up. But, if you're going to close games, I would like a little more work, but I'm not him. So I hope that answered your question, Drew, and thanks for submitting it to us. Cass, Jeff has a question that kind of plays off this last one. He wants to know, who do you see settling in as the Saturday and Sunday starters backing up Pauly on Friday nights?
Well, thank you for your question, Jeff. I kind of have two different versions of answers to this question. With Summer out injured right now, I think it's got to be Tanner Gordon and Andrew Saulfrank in either order. I think those two could pitch either Saturday or Sunday. So in all honesty, leave them where they are right now. I just don't think that anyone else is ready for the sort of innings and competitions you want from your weekend starters going into Big Ten play. I think Gabe Bierman is much closer than I expected, having not seen fall ball myself. With this Indiana State matchup, if he draws that start, I think that's going to be a real sign of where he stands. But if Tanner and Andrew can pitch like they did this weekend, it's going to be tough to knock him out of the rotation, which leads us to when Tommy Summer gets back healthy, you've now got four solid starters for three starting spots. I think it could even be a mix and match based on the matchups each weekend. If they need a lefty heavy, maybe go with Saulfrank. I don't know. That will probably be a bit more mix and match if they're all on their game. So for now, it's Gordon and Saulfrank, and I don't know that it's that super close as far as guys who can realistically eat up a good few innings at the start of games. So, Carl, Audrey asked the next question. Big Ten plays coming up. What are y'all's predictions for how the conference is going to look? Who's bad, who's good, that kind of thing. I know it's early, but there are enough games under most teams' belts to make some calls.
Yeah, I would say so. This is a really good question, Audrey, and I appreciate it. It's a tough one. We're able to tell something about it. I would say compared to this point of the year in most seasons, I'm less sure than I've been. But as I typically like to do, sometimes I don't trust necessarily the pundits or the rankings that are judged based on the eye tests and everything. I like to kind of just go with good, cold, hard numbers. So I'm basing this exclusively on the RPI. And I'm actually going to share what I pumped into a spreadsheet and generated it out. I don't I'm not actually predicting that the numbers will come out exactly this way, but I think this tells something about the Big Ten Conference's strength of schedule within the conference and a potential ranking based on the performances so far. So if you look at this, the way it popped out is you kind of look, this is the ranking of the teams based on the schedule they have to play in the Big Ten, which is interesting because if you'll remember a few weeks ago, I was saying that Purdue might be battling for the Big Ten title. And now my numbers say they're going to finish dead last, but that's really based on just how they have played so far. Versus a team like Nebraska, who has a losing season right now, but they have played such a strong schedule that that gets them, in comparison to their Big Ten schedule, a number three finish in the conference. So, I wouldn't by any means, I'm not going to predict that Illinois is going to win 24 games in conference and not lose any. That's ridiculous. The best Indiana team that did 21-3. So I don't really find 24-0 to be a legitimate possibility. But the rest of it doesn't look like it may be all that off. Michigan is the one nationally ranked team, 18-6, should be legitimate based on what they should be able to do. The only reason Northwestern is as high as they are is because of the strength of schedule within the conference. They have the lightest strength of schedule based on this ranking, based on the RPI so far to date. And it's also possible the RPI is going to shake out a little differently over time. That, you know, Illinois played a really tough schedule and been hot. Maybe when they lighten up, that RPI comes down. But, you know, I don't know that it's going to be that far off. But, Indiana being at number seven, I think Indiana can perform better than that. I think we all know that this team has the potential to get even better than they've played. And possibly as they face different competition going forward, take advantage and play well on the weekend. And the one thing that I had said about Indiana overall was that Fridays were going to be key, and Fridays have been the best day. we've suddenly turned it around from last year, and now Friday is the team's best day. So overall, I think there's plenty of opportunity. And also, I would not be horribly surprised if Illinois, Michigan, Nebraska, Iowa, even Penn State and Indiana were competing for the Big Ten title. And I left out, Minnesota and Maryland, who teams typically talk about in this league. And Minnesota was voted by the coaches to be the Big Ten champion. So there've been a lot of surprises. There may be more. And we'll see that as we go forward. So Chris, here is another question from Audrey. If you could invite any team to come play IU at the BART, who would it be? And maybe a brief why.
Thanks, Audrey, for the question. And thanks for not being specific that it's a college baseball team. Because if it's any team, I'll take the Mets. Plenty of ex-college ball players on the team. The Frazier, Conforto, DeGrom. There's plenty more. No, but really, to me, this would be an easy one. It's Mississippi State. I'd love to call balks on Limo's guy. Mess with Cheese. What is he, coaching third, probably? He's easy to heckle anyway. But it'd be a fun time to see them. And you never know. You never know what happens at the BART. Maybe we sneak 2 out of 3 on them and send them home upset. But I would definitely be, my choice, just for reasons, obvious ones. But it'd be a fun matchup, too. They're playing well. We're starting to get it together. Bring them to the BART. Let's go. But if the Mets want to come, they can come, too. thanks, OJ. I appreciate it. We're going to go over to Cass now for a stats update. Here you go, Cass.
Okay, so the bats really hit well this past weekend, and the batting averages very much. The team as a whole jumped their batting average 40 points during this weekend. That's including the Cincinnati game as well. So 45 points is really nuts for 1 week of play. The big winner in this was Ryan Feinman, who came mostly close to doubling his batting average. His batting average went up 114 points this week. He hit ridiculously well. Sam Crail was right there with him at 93 points. And then Drew Ashley and Matt Gorski and Lloyd were all around, were in the 30 to 40 point bump range. And yes, you can say it was Canisius, all of that, but hey, if that's what these bats needed to wake up going into conference play, I'm all for that. Also going with the bats, the number of hits it took this week to generate one run was really low. Coming into the week, it was sitting at about 1.5, so needed an average of 1.5 hits to bring home a run. This last week, it was 1.2. And when you round it, this weekend, it was 51 runs on 53 hits. And yes, that's going to be a combination of walks, HBPs, errors, but also when you're hitting extra bases, it doesn't take as many hits to drive in those runs. For a little bit of couple of the best years overall, for IU baseball, 2013 and 2014 were in that 1.6 to 1.7 hits per run. So even coming into the weekend, IU was down from that. So this team, while the batting average wasn't so great, they were still scoring runs off of what they had. So that is a positive to note, especially that ridiculous one run per hit. Like that's nuts. But the last thing, the pitching strikeouts. And for those counting at home for donation purposes, the pitching staff is up to 145 strikeouts. A lot of those this weekend. They were averaging 6.9 strikeouts a game coming into Cincinnati. Over this last week, they averaged 9.6. And when you look just at the weekend, they averaged almost 11 per game. That, I think, is more what we were expecting to see, especially with these starters, compared to the 6.9.
Whether it be at home, too, Cass. Let it happen at home. We get the chicken.
Yep. So whether it stays at that 9 to 11 strikeouts a game, that's still a big improvement, and it's nice to see, even if it is against Canisius. So, Carl, more numbers. What's happening in the national scene?
On a personal note, I am very excited for a big matchup tomorrow in which Mississippi Valley State, I'm so excited I don't even know who they're playing, but they're going to play somebody tomorrow, and they're hopefully going to finish the game because they're the only team in the country that's not played 10 games. And I spent a good chunk of my winter break writing a program to generate a real-time bracket, but the way it works, I'm not going to go into the details, but if every team doesn't play 10 games, it doesn't actually work. So Mississippi Valley State finishes that game tomorrow, and I can finally produce those results. But more importantly, again, I'm a national scene. I'm going to talk about the same two teams I talked about last week, which were our former coaches. Tracy Smith's Arizona State is the very last unbeaten team in the nation. So the turnaround that program has done and the ridiculous amount of runs that team is scoring is impressive. Yeah, they haven't faced big-time competition, and we know they're going to. They're going to get into the pack, and they're going to have to face the number one team in the country, UCLA. They're going to have to face the defending national champion. Well, most likely they're going to face those teams. But those kind of quality teams. Stanford, there's a lot of really good teams in the pack this year. Oregon's decent this year, but we'll see what they can produce, but they're starting to really raise eyes out there. And then of course, Coach Lemonis's Mississippi State team that, Chris Feeney, mentioned earlier in this broadcast, they went to Florida this past weekend. and took 2 out of 3 in Gainesville. D1 rewarded Mississippi State by vaulting them up to number 2 in the country in their poll this morning. So Coach Lemonis and Coach Smith are off to very, very good starts this year. And it will be an interesting season as it progresses. I didn't really focus much on the Big Ten this time because I answered that in my question. So with that, we're going to kind of work into the what the Hoosiers have in store this week. Josh, what can you tell us about our competition starting with tomorrow night's game?
Yeah, thanks, Carl. Tomorrow night we head to Terre Haute, Bob Warren Field at 4 p.m. to go head-to-head against Indiana State, who, as I said earlier, is off to a scorching hot start, 16-1, under 6-year head man Mitch Hannes. It's the best start in their history. They've won 9 straight, are 6-0 at home. IU leads the overall series 62-45-1. And we swept them last year. This is the first meeting this season, as we had one postponed back on March 5th due to some nice 0-degree wind chill weather. They're coming off a 4-win week, beating Purdue 4-3 in their midweek, and then sweeping the Citadel. They only gave up 3 runs on the weekend, but their sole loss has been a midweek game. Offensively, they're led by catcher Max Wright at 462. 4 others are hitting over 300, so they're not just a one-man show. They've got a bunch of guys spread out that are hitting really well right now. They're 11th in the nation with 38 hit-by-pitches. They like to score early. They're outscoring opponents 17-2 in the first inning and 23-8 in the second inning. Pitching-wise, they have the 10th best ERA in the country, sitting at 2.53. They're led by reliever Jake Ridgeway, who's had 9 appearances and has a 0.95 ERA. We're expecting ISU to start Jeremy Guerrero, and I don't think I've seen anything out yet. If there's been something out, let me know. But he started 2 of their 3 midweeks, and he's got 8 1/3 innings pitched, 9 hits, 5 earned runs. And in both of his starts, he was followed by Austin Cross, who has 4.2 innings, 1 hit, no earned runs, and 2 wins in those midweek games. I'm isolating those stats from all other appearances. But and Ridgeway, their big guy, did appear in both of those. So I kind of their format through these has been Guerrero, Cross, Ridgeway in the midweeks. but it's a good opportunity for us to pick up a really solid win for the RPI and resume this early. First pitch is at 4 p.m. Tuesday with a 51-degree forecast, partially sunny. And also, it is available on ESPN Plus for those who have that. And Max did the preview write-up for Iowa this week, so I'll just give you a brief summary of things that stood out to me from his article that's going to come out later this week. The Hawkeyes will come to Bloomington with a 10-7 record. They split their series with now 9-11 Hawaii and lost 2 or 3 games to now 9-7 Evansville, who we'll see here shortly. They were held to just 1 run in the final 2 games of that Evansville series. They did win 2 of 3 against a team that's been ranked this season, Oklahoma State. Each of those games in the series were decided by a run. Iowa finished 33-20 overall and tied Maryland for 4th in the Big Ten. Offensively, Iowa is 1 spot above the Hoosiers in team batting average at 262 compared to our 256. They've scored 90 runs in comparison to our 115. They've only hit 10 home runs compared to our 25. Indiana won't want to surrender a lead early to Iowa, as the Hawkeyes are 5-0 when they score first, but when I was trailing past the 6th, they're 1-6. So it'd be a good idea to get up early on them. And then hitters to watch, catcher Austin Martin is a junior. He's a JUCO transfer, hitting .327 with 3 doubles, 2 homers, and 6 RBIs. Leads the team with 7 multi-hit games and has started 14 games at catcher this season so far. Another guy, Ben Norman, a junior outfielder. He's hitting .258 with 3 doubles and a team best 3 home runs, 11 RBI. Good speed. He's stolen 6 out of 7 bases that he's attempted. So Ryan will need to keep an eye on him and Wyatt too if he gets one of the starts. Another bat, senior Mitchell Bowe. He's been a starter for the last 2 years and has started in the leadoff spot for every game so far this year that they've played. He's hitting .279 with 3 doubles, a triple, a home run with 10 RBIs, leads the team in walks at 14 and has reached base 42% of the time. Pitching, their pitching hasn't really been that great. They have a team ERA of 4.04 and have given up 75 runs. 63 of those have been earned runs. Given up 115 hits, 87 walks, and 140 innings. To compare, Indiana surrendered 64 walks and 123 hits and 156 innings. But the Hawkeyes do have good strikeout stuff, totaling 141. So something we might need to keep an eye on here. Expected starting pitchers. Friday night guy is senior right-hander Cole McDonald. He started 5 games, but just has a 1-3 record with a 5.47 ERA. He's given up 26 hits, 15 earned runs, and walked 12 batters in 24 innings. Opponents are hitting .277 against him, and he's given up 4 earned runs in 4 of his 5 starts. Saturday's projected starter is sophomore Cam Bowman. Hasn't had much success this year, 0-1 on the year with a 5.12 ERA in 4 starts, under 20 innings pitched, yet to go further than 5 innings in a start. Opponents are hitting .250 against him and have scored 13 runs. And I think what looks like their best pitcher is their Sunday guy at this point, junior Gran Judkins. Team best 1.52 ERA in almost 30 innings with a 2-1 record and a batting average of 170 against. So he's got pretty good stuff. He's gone 5 innings in all of his starts this season, giving up 17 hits, 5 earned runs, and 14 walks. He's got a 90-plus fastball, so he has 30 strikeouts on the year. So we'll see how the bats can tackle that. So that's a Tuesday game in Terre Haute against the Sycamores starting at 4. Then a 3-game set at the BART this weekend against the Hawkeyes with start times of 6:05 on Friday, 2:05 on Saturday, and 1:05 on Sunday. Upper 50s on Friday and Saturday with some sunshine, mid-60s, but a 35% chance of rain on Sunday. It's Indiana in March, so who knows where that weather forecast will actually be at by the time we get to the weekend. But good opportunity for the Hoosiers to compete and pick up some wins. So that'll do it for this week's preview. Chris, what thoughts do you have for us?
Okay, thanks, Josh. As far as final thoughts, I just wanted to take a couple minutes to acknowledge some people. First off, the Cuban Center. The videos we've been getting, the Twitter account is so much better now. The montages on the scoreboard. Not that, the scoreboard was cool last year. Believe me, we didn't ever have one. But it's just, it's definitely an upgrade this season. They're doing a lot of hard work. And I mean, they put together an Irish jig dance. And they got the montages for pregame from the day before. Like, stuff like that's cool, man. I want to acknowledge their hard work. And it's definitely appreciated. And, if no one told you, I'm telling you, we're telling you. So we really do appreciate your hard work and what you got. Always had a busy weekend this weekend. Okay. He had 4 game wrap ups. He had a 1-on-1 with Coach Mercer. He then had another media on Sunday. He did the preview for Iowa. So he's working really hard. And want to acknowledge him for his hard work, too. And finally, for a third acknowledgement, I want to acknowledge 2 future Hoosiers. Kip Forges, I'm going to try to say his last name right, and Josh Pine for winning semi-state. They are going to the state title game on Saturday. Okay, they're obviously multi-sport athletes, but they've got a little more time playing basketball right now. They'll work on baseball after the Saturday's game. You can watch this game. It's about a 12:45. It's an approximate 12:45 start. It's the Class 2A state championship. It's Linton Stockton versus Andrian. It's at Bankers Life, but it's also going to be on that Fox Sports Indiana channel if you have that in your cable package, or go to Bankers Life and watch them and root on some future Hoosier baseball players. I've seen a lot of clips from them. You know, Josh is more of a bench guy that moved into the starting role due to injury. Kip's been playing all year. There's a podcast that's out where he spoke to John Blau. I believe he does some work for the Herald Times. These kids are mature young men, and hearing them talk about their relationship with each other and with their teammates, whether it's basketball or baseball, you know, these seem like two special kids coming our way. So I want to acknowledge them for making it to the state title game, win or lose. Hell of a job, guys. But go ahead, win the whole damn thing, right? Why not? So with that, we're going to wrap it up this week's edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. You can read up more on Indiana Baseball Program at iubase.com. You can follow the Twitter account at CUAtTheBart and at iubase17. You can leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. As far as, you know, subscribe to the podcast, subscribe to the YouTube channel. It all helps in some kind of algorithm way. I'm not sure how it works, but just click the button. For Carl, Cass, and Josh, I'm Chris, and we'll see you at the BART. I'm going back to Indiana now to see my baby in her evening gown.